Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buccanani. Fresh off a 34-12 victory for the Nittany Lions against those hated Mountaineers from West Virginia, Chris. Nice win, no matter how you cut it.
Yes, sir. I'm feeling good. I don't know how hated the Mountaineers are, if I'm being honest, but I tell you what, I hated seeing all their fans talking so much smack on the internets for 2 months. And once again, we have a buildup to a big road game from Penn State. We've got, you know, just unbelievable, off the charts levels of irrational confidence from their fan base in the summer months leading up to it. And then another humiliation on the field, and they'll all go slink back under whatever rock they rolled out from under.
But you know what, Chris, I think that's what made them hate it, at least to me. Their reaction, their lead up to this game, the whole, they had schools were off on Friday locally in Morgantown because of the event, all their excitement and their confidence. And you know what? It kind of, Pat McAfee there preaching, you know, the upset was going to happen. West Virginia was going to win. If you saw the point spread, it kept going down more and more. It was like smart money sure. was on West Virginia. If you saw the predictions from the pundits, this was the really popular upset game. It didn't materialize at all that way.
Well, and it just goes back to one of the things we've talked about over the offseason, Jim, is that just because James Franklin can't get over the hump on defeating well-coached, extraordinarily talented Michigan and Ohio State teams that go to the playoffs and contend for the national championship, it doesn't mean that he's some kind of dunce who is just going to get rolled by any team that's got a modicum of talent on its roster. And so to me, I think that narrative, just based on the expectations and the hype around Penn State going into 2023 and the fact that they let down in their two biggest games, metastasized into this swinging of the pendulum in the opposite direction, where people started to doubt that he could get his team prepared to win a game like this. So probably good for James and definitely good for Penn State fans to get that big W to start the season.
Yes, and I made the statement previously that having an initial game like this, it's excellent for the team, for the fan base. I saw all these other games that were total mismatches, games that were 50-0, you know, at halftime.
There were a lot of them.
And really, you learn absolutely zero about your team. I'm seeing some of these post-game accolades for the quarterback who threw for 73 touchdowns in their first game against East-West Podunk. And it's like, why does that? It shouldn't even matter. So to play a decent team, a team with a pulse, I think it's so good for the team. So now as we see the MAC portion of the season coming up, it's okay because you saw your team perform against a decent opponent, Chris.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think it's good inside that locker room as well, Jim, because there were so many question marks about this team coming into this season with three new coordinators and, Drew Aller going into his second season and all the problems that have been very heavily discussed over the offseason about the wide receiving core, changes on the offensive line, position switches on defense, some schematic changes both sides of the ball. And you don't learn about yourself, as you just said, playing MAC schools. Those games are the college football equivalent of tune-ups. They're the preseason. You know, they're there basically for families to be able to come see a game at Beaver Stadium, for the athletic department to make a little money, and for the football team to work out all the kinks. And also, by the way, for MAC schools to be able to fund their athletic departments with big fat checks from Penn State and other Big Ten schools. But you don't learn anything about the team. The team doesn't learn anything about themselves. So what I like about the result we had this past weekend is that not only did Penn State have an opportunity to measure where they're at on a number of those key question marks against a legitimate opponent from a Power Four conference. I feel like just the way the game went, all those items I just listed got addressed specifically in their own ways. And now you can go into the next portion of the schedule feeling really good that what you believed about yourself coming out of camp is actually true. I think not just the win, but the way it happened is going to be a big positive to build on for Penn State.
No doubt. They answered a lot of questions in the positive way. But let's start beginning of the game, though. Very shaky start for both teams. And I think the good thing about that, Chris, is it was shaky, not just because it was the first game, but for the buildup to this game was so great. West Virginia, it turned into their Super Bowl. Because of that, because of the old-time rivalry, Penn State-West Virginia, all of that, it became that way for Penn State also, and I think the players. It's good also not only that they played an opponent with a pulse, but they played in front of a hostile crowd that created this kind of emotional environment.
And I am not trying to talk any smack here at all, Jim. I have a lot of respect for the environment there in Morgantown and what you've heard about it over the years. Again, you can only glean so much from watching on television, and I know there was the massive disruption with the long rain delay at halftime, but did you feel like that was among the tougher, more intimidating environments Penn State has gone on the road and played in? I didn't really get that sense.
Not really. And I also, and I'm not sure how much of it was we could tell from the TV broadcast, but I thought Penn State was fairly well represented because it was a drive-to game, okay?
Sure.
You could get there. Anecdotally, I talked to a lot of people who were going to that game. And I think there was trying to listen to the crowd reaction when something good happened from Penn State. There was a decent amount of noise. So I think Penn State was also fairly well represented for being the away team.
Yeah, and I think all that West Virginia's Super Bowl stuff, again, maybe that lasts through the first few snaps of the first quarter. You always hear players who play in the Super Bowl talk about how maybe the first drive or the first few minutes of the game, you're focused on the fact that you're in the Super Bowl, and then you settle in and it's just back to playing football. I kind of felt like that's what happened in this game. And again, you saw some jitters. I have not been able to identify the West Virginia safety or whomever it was that both Drew Aller and James Franklin said were clapping the snap cadence that caused the initial fumble. But then, of course, Penn State gets the ball right back, jitters on both sides. I think that all dissipated very quickly. And then after that, it was just a football game. And kind of what I expected was going to happen in this game did, I think even a little bit more so than I thought. And that's just the talent differential between the two teams spoke volumes. And that's what went to work pretty quickly. Penn State is just a better and a deeper football team than West Virginia has.
And that's exactly what it was. It was more talent on both sides of the ball that came out, Chris. Now, you mentioned the incident where the snap came to Drew Aller when he wasn't ready, very obviously. And for Drew Aller's reaction so quickly, it had to have been legitimate. I don't think he reacts in that way. I don't think the snap happens so prematurely unless there was something going on. So I think it was a legitimate issue based on the reaction of Drew Aller.
Yeah, and I have a bunch of notes I want to get through as we go throughout the hour here, Jim. So I'm going to jump ahead to one of them and just talk a little bit about the body language of Drew Aller, because you brought it up. I thought right out of the gate, to see him up in the ref's face, agitated, yelling, and you just the way he's carrying himself and the willingness to be vocal, I was happy to see that. It was a first play, and I was looking, I want to see some emotion from this guy. And I know, there are probably some people who are hearing me talk right now and rolling their eyes, and I get it. I typically tend to shy away from this kind of subjective body language, show me emotion, all that kind of thing. But I just, after watching Drew for a year and listening to his teammates talk about what he's improved upon in the offseason, and you read some of the in-depth interviews that were done, not only with him, with some of the other players that were written this summer, I think there was really something to the fact that the kid had to grow into more of a leadership role. There's no question all the physical tools are there. The guy is absolutely built like a first-round NFL draft pick, and he can do the things athletically that that requires. But there's, you know, there's something in between the ears, and there's something just kind of in your gut and in your heart that makes a great quarterback. And the fact that we saw from that early, saw that from him so early, got me feeling optimistic. And then I think the rest of his day only reinforced that that wasn't a mirage. That's the player he has come to be this season. And that's maybe my biggest takeaway from the game in terms of what's different from 2023 to 2024 that could be the difference for making the postseason for Penn State this year. So I'm excited about that.
I'm glad you brought that up, Chris. And I'm not one of those who will roll their eyes, because I think it was so important for Drew Aller specifically. If this would have happened to him a year ago, you get the sense that he would have, his shoulders would have slumped. He would have just pouted, walked off the field. It's going to sound terrible, but almost in tears. Okay. As opposed to him saying, essentially, hell no, that was wrong.
I'm the baddest MF-er out here. This is my team and my field. Yes. And I am going to let this guy know what's going on, because these guys are trying to screw us. I loved it.
Yes. And that's unacceptable. Can't happen. And it set up. And my first thought was, they're not going to change the call there. But guess what? West Virginia may better not do that again. He's made the official well aware of it and that he's not going to tolerate it. I think that was a huge, huge point of conversation here, his reaction to it. And you're right. I think that, in essence, established how he was going to be the rest of the game, that he was going to take charge. And Chris, it didn't hurt that West Virginia, I called it karma, that they gave the ball right back.
There were a couple of moments of karmic balance in that game on Saturday, Jim. There's no question.
There really was. Now, when we come back, I want to continue the conversation about Drew Aller, because other than him getting upset about that play, the fumble where the West Virginia defender clapped and simulated the snap count, we're going to talk about the rest of his game. Chris, we're going to do that when we come back, right after this break.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership, with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State's 34-12 win over West Virginia on Saturday. Chris, just a quick note. By the way, I love to pat myself on the back. I think you know me well enough that's...
I know this.
Okay. My predicted score for the game was 34-15. I'd like to say I even projected that James Franklin would foolishly go for 2 points and miss it. And that's why they would have 34 points instead of 35, Chris.
Did you really?
That was my mindset. I said, you know what? They're going to put up, 5 touchdowns. But somewhere along the way, James Franklin's going to foolishly go for 2 points. Okay,
that was my mindset. I hate that it's that evident that it's that easily predictable that you were able to make that forecast and be right. Let's not even talk about it anymore. I'm in a good mood. Don't harsh my mellow.
All right, let's go back to Drew Aller. We talked about his reaction when there was the fumble where West Virginia player apparently clapped, caused the early snap. Drew Aller, I think a lot of folks are going to point to the explosive plays, which were good, were great. It was wonderful to have it. It was wonderful that they pushed the ball down the field. Chris, I'm going to start, though, with how about Drew Aller, the mobile quarterback?
We've been hearing about it. We've been getting the warning from Franklin and the staff for months now. This is the thing with this game, Jim. It's so nice after all this speculation and all the picking through all the little details to have an actual game to talk about. And the fact that we heard about the weight he dropped and what Chuck Losey and his staff have been doing to improve his explosivity as a running threat. And by the way, credit to Penn State's strength and conditioning program. If it's not the best in college football, it is right up there in the elite tier for sure. And it definitely brings a different dynamic to his game. And just to me, not just makes him more dynamic as a weapon, but the assertiveness with which he made the decisions about when he was going to hold the ball and look to throw downfield and when he was going to tuck and run speaks to what we were talking about in the last segment, the increased level of confidence and just the comfort level he showed out there. I really felt watching that game yesterday, Jim, like he was in command of that offense in a way he rarely was last season, especially when he had to go on the road.
I love the word assertiveness because I was going to say, I liked seeing some of the mobility from him, but I liked even more the decision-making and how quickly he made those decisions and made the correct decisions.
And made the right decisions, yes.
It wasn't just, okay, abandon the pocket. It was he did it exactly at the right time, so that he didn't allow the defense to – he reacted quicker than the defense did. And, Chris, they turned into first downs. They were third down plays that he turned into first downs. And in the one play specifically where he put his shoulder down, said, I'm bigger than you, so I'm going to run you over and get the first down. That I appreciated.
Yeah, I agree. Now, one note of caution, because we're all feeling really good after this week one win, going 1-0 this week and this season so far. There's a line I'm thinking of, which I can't say because this goes on the radio somewhere, from Pulp Fiction. The great Harvey Keitel portraying Winston Wolfe says, and many of the movie buffs in the audience will know, let's not start and then you can finish the rest of the line if you know it. And let's just keep in mind that, yes, it's a Power Four opponent, but it's also a Big 12 team and possibly a middle of the pack Big 12 team. The ability to do this against West Virginia's defense does not necessarily translate into the ability to do it against even some of the middle of the road Big 10 defenses. But just when you look at the sample size we've got so far this season, the confidence, the command, and the assertiveness, to go back to words that we've already used, on display from Drew Aller, to me, Jim, just really inspires confidence in me that as the road gets a little rockier as we go on, this team's going to continue to grow and improve. The foundation that was on display in week one, man, that has to have you feeling pretty optimistic about what's ahead for the Nittany Lions.
Let's talk about what we talked about all offseason. Explosive plays, Chris. We saw plenty of them. Tell me about Andy Kolelnicki's play calling and this team's ability to move the ball, hit some big plays downfield.
Well, I thought it was largely a breath of fresh air after a few years of the Mike Yurcich offense, which was an up-and-down experience for Penn State, decidedly down last season. You can tell me whether you agree or not. I felt like, especially in the first quarter, like Andy was maybe trying to find his sea legs as a play caller. But then after a little initial herky jerkiness with, you know, different personnel packages and running Bo Prabula in and out of the game, I felt like he hit a groove. And from that point forward, you could see, I probably said this 24 times. What I thought made Joe Moorhead the right fit for Penn State when he was here is that he had a great instinct for putting the talent at his disposal in position to succeed. I think you saw that on display, and that definitely helped in the big plays in the passing game. And whatever switch was flipped from when Yurcich left, and then, you know, for a short while, we had Ty Howell and Jawan Sider calling the plays, and now Andy up in the booth making the calls. Nick Singleton looks like Nick Singleton again, for sure.
Definitely. That was huge. That I will give credit to Andy Kotelnicki for the play calling that created the opportunity for Nick Singleton, where you saw some of the holes, the blocking schemes created holes, and Nick Singleton made big plays. The other part to this, and by the way, have we established, Chris, that I like to be right?
It was mentioned earlier in the segment, yes.
Okay, here's part two, Jim likes to be right. Going into this season, Jim said over and over and over again, they have a guy who's physically capable of being a number one receiver. And it's not the five-star that transferred in. It's the other guy, Trey Wallace. And he established himself, Chris, I think, as a number one wide receiver because he did the things that you want to see. He got himself open. He had two touchdowns, very different types of catches. And that second one in the end zone at the end of the half, it was you had one shot to go into the end zone, Chris. Then you would have to kick a field goal, which is no gimme for this team now, as we now know. But they had one shot to go into the end zone, and it took not just a real special catch by Trey Wallace. It took Drew Allard to be confident that his guy, Trey Wallace, could make that kind of catch.
Both yeah.
And very important.
We're so fortunate to have a kid with the raw physical tools of Drew Allard. Let's not bury the lead to make the throw. I mean, to thread the needle and get the ball there. But yeah, to go back to talking about Trey Wallace, in my For the Bloggy pregame column, I listed three veteran players who needed to take their game to another level in order for Penn State to have a good season and to win against West Virginia. And Trey was my number one guy. And I said, duh, this is the most obvious answer in the world. But sometimes there's a reason why it's the most obvious answer, because it's the best and it's the most important. And that was it. Penn State needed an alpha in their receiving core. And he had shown some things last season that gave you indication that he could be that, but he couldn't stay on the field, right? So when you think back, Jim, through the litany of all-time greats at the position for Penn State, you think about Kenny Jackson and Bobby Engram and Allen Robinson and Chris Godwin. What all of those guys have in common for me is that they made plays that were beyond the routine with enough frequency that they created a confidence in their quarterback that if he could get the ball to them more often than not, they could do their part and make the play. So that score was incredibly important for Penn State. As we were sitting at the We Are In enjoying Pat Romano's hospitality during the protracted rain delay, I was saying to some of my friends I was watching the game with, can you imagine how bad we would be feeling right now if we didn't get that touchdown at the end? It kind of reminded me, Jim, of the Brenton Strange touchdown at the end of the first half in the 2022 Purdue game, where that was a critical score, really helped swing momentum and ended up being more important to the final result than this one was in Morgantown. But yeah, it was very important for the game. But to me, just as important is I think that pays dividends down the road, because now you're seeing an increased bond of confidence that Drew Allard will be able to know, if I get the ball to Trey, I can feel pretty good about the fact that he's going to make the play for me.
And the play prior, Drew Allard put the ball up for grabs and you had Omari Evans go and make a play.
Yeah, and listen, I understand West Virginia fans are going to cry about the OPI that wasn't called, and maybe it was, but that fourth down ball spot was ludicrous to me. I have no explanation for that whatsoever. And I don't like to complain too much about officiating or bad calls, but we can just call it like we see it. Like, there was no way that ball crossed the line to gain. It wasn't even close.
And let's do that real quick, though. The pass interference is so much open to interpretation. The West Virginia defender actually was the one who initiated contact.
Exactly. Yeah. And the refs were letting both sides be kind of handsy all day, which I'm fine with, actually.
Exactly. That's why I had, and again, I'm looking at it from a Penn State perspective, but on the pass interference potential, West Virginia, yes, if they would have called offensive pass interference, it would not have been an awful call. But that it's such a gray area, that pass interference, compared to the call where it went up to the booth twice. Now, again, perhaps West Virginia scores anyway at the goal line. But the other one that happened prior was fourth down, was not even close. And you know, if the guys doing the announcing of the game say it's an atrocious call, you know that it is.
Oh, the national consensus online was that it was a bad call because the back turned his back. The running back, his back is facing the line to gain. So you know he's holding the ball out in front of him. And you can see his whole body as he's brought down is behind the line to gain. Like, there's just no way. There's no way even the nose of the ball got close.
Yes, that's the one. They get it wrong on the field. Hey, that happens. It's the heat of battle. It happens very quickly. To go to replay and get it wrong, though, no excuse for that. All right, Chris, we got lots more to talk about when we come back after this break.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, quarter number three. He's Chris. I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State's big win over West Virginia on Saturday. Chris, staying on the offensive side of the ball just a little bit longer. Penn State's offensive line, zero sacks allowed.
Again, they are going to face tougher defensive fronts as the season goes along, Jim. But, this is not a cupcake opponent that they were facing. And I thought the O-line played exceptionally well. Maybe a few places where you would have liked them to be a little bit more aggressive in terms of run blocking. I think that was one of the many factors on why Catron Allen couldn't quite get it going on the ground, although he did have the nice receiving score. So I was glad to see him get on the board as well, along with Singleton. But you're replacing two tackles who go to the NFL. You're replacing a center who goes to the NFL. And the assumption was that best case scenario, the indications we have seen from Phil Troutwine over the last few seasons is that this guy knows how to develop talent. And he's definitely done a good job on the recruiting trail, improving the caliber of raw material to work with at his disposal. And so when you thought about, again, like I'll call best case scenario for Penn State, it was that we've got good talent that came in. So the fundamentals are there. This guy can take that clay and mold it into something that can be more than it was when you got it on campus. And, reasonable argument to be made that all of that was going to happen. Working against believing any of that until you saw it was years, if not decades, of actual on-the-field offensive line performance of Nittany Lions teams that just, I think, gave you plenty of reason to pause. But what we saw on the field, again, you can tell Jim that my like, don't jinx it, don't jinx it, don't jinx it is just like, it's kicking in. But I got to call it like I see it. I was very impressed with the offensive line. I thought it was one of the major positives of the day.
Definitely. But I go.
And tackle play, especially, by the way.
Yes. Which is where the question marks were. You had two new tackles replacing two NFL tackles. So that's where the questions are going to be.
Can we talk about the tackles just a little bit more? Because I really want to praise these guys. I know I have talked with you before about my theory that the sophomore slump is real for a variety of reasons. Like I said, I would love to get some sports psychologist to do a study about this, about what actually contributes to a guy comes in, plays and plays well as a freshman, and then you see a dip from the sophomore year, and then it swings back up through the remainder of his career. I thought we saw that in Drew Shelton. To me, the Drew Shelton on the field against West Virginia looked more like the player we saw in the bowl game 2 years ago. And Anthony Donka looks exactly as advertised, doesn't he?
Oh, gosh, yes. Yes. And it's wonderful to see, but where I was headed, Chris, was that I am texting with like 7 or 8 different people during the game. Okay. I miss plays because my head's down, you know, texting. But somebody asked about where's Julian Fleming? Where's the running game? Where, you know, I got all these questions like at halftime. The fact is, they just didn't run that many plays.
Yes. I couldn't believe when they were flashing the stats up on the screen how few plays Penn State had run, how few passes Drew Aller had attempted. It didn't feel that way to me at all. But then you saw the numbers. And again, we're used to an offense that needs to take 3, maybe 4 downs just to barely get 10 yards. So when you're getting yardage in big chunks, you're just going to run fewer plays.
Just to relay the numbers, Penn State ran 27 plays from scrimmage in the first half. 27. That's it. West Virginia had 44.
And put up 20 points. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. So, you know, when you score the last drive that ended in the touchdown took 3 plays. So they scored quickly multiple times. And they had another drive that was 4 plays, okay, and 84 yards. So that's what happens. I think it was just – so with Catron Allen, who had 10 carries for 20 yards with a long of just 5 yards, is there anything wrong with Catron Allen? No, no, no. If he had gotten his 20 carries, somewhere in there he would have busted a couple of them out. My concern level on Catron Allen, 0.
Yeah, 100%. I'm not concerned at all. You really had to stretch to pull negatives out of the game. So, yeah, of course, you would have loved to see him have as good of a day as Nick Singleton did, and he didn't. So if I've got to pick out some negatives, that's one of them. But does it concern me about the long term for the player? Not at all. Not at all.
And it's the same way late in the first half in my own head, I was saying, oh, where's Tyler Warren? You know, they haven't targeted him yet. Well, what do they do? Next play, they target him for a first down. He got himself a touchdown catch also. The one question, though, Julian Fleming, was he even targeted?
He was not. You would have maybe liked to see the other receivers get a little more action, Jim. But again, going back to what we've been talking about, the relatively low number of plays, the fact that you have a ton of playmakers and there's only one football, you just got to take what the defense is giving you, right? So when you have this relatively small sample size, someone is going to get left hungry on any given day. And so I don't, again, necessarily take it as an issue that those guys didn't get involved. If Trey Wallace is going to be left open, get the ball to Trey Wallace. And if they're going to continue to leave him open, then keep getting him the ball. You know, that in fact, isn't one of the major criticisms of Mike Yurcich is that he went away from what was working. And Andy Kotelnicki has said, I'm going to do the exact opposite. Now, he doesn't call out his predecessor when he does it, but he's been very pointed in saying, when we find something that's working, we're going to keep working it until it doesn't.
I think it's interesting looking at the numbers. Penn State only threw 18 passes, Chris. 18. And that counts the one that Bo Prabula threw.
Right.
Of the 18.
And I'm supposed to be wringing my hands because Julian Fleming didn't get involved when we threw 18 passes. I mean, come on, guys.
Half the passes went to Trey Wallace. 9 of the 18. Am I upset about that? No. No.
There are plenty of real things to be worried about in Penn State football and in life. Don't feel the need to manufacture them where they don't exist.
Just to give the numbers, Trey Wallace was targeted 9 times, 5 completions. Tyler Warren targeted 3 times, 3 completions. Omari Evans, 4 targets, 2 completions. And Catron Allen and Nick Singleton were each targeted once, had a completion, one of them for 20 yards, one for 13 yards, and oh, by the way, a touchdown from Catron Allen. Chris,
just
no concern at all about that.
Just 4 touchdown receptions away from the program record for receiving touchdowns for a tight end for Tyler Warren. He might get that in the next 2 games.
he very well might, if they choose to target him. So
I can't believe, by the way, how much you have got me to willingly, happily discuss not only the offense, but the quarterback in particular. You know, Jim, like, I don't like offense and I definitely don't like quarterbacks. And yet I'm a bullion talking about everything we saw from Drew Aller. I just remember, I got to shout this out. I'm a huge Eagles fan. So on balance, I'm rooting for young Josiah Trotter to have a nice career because of his dad and brother, both Philadelphia Eagles now. But that stiff arm Aller put on Trotter to push him to the ground. I mean, again, when you just talk about setting the tone for the type of player you need to be to have this kind of season that we all want, that play, that's one of those things that we might be talking about 20 years from now. And then the fact that the camera just happened to catch Drew dropping an F-bomb in slow motion, talking smack at the guy as he got back up, just letting him know, like, yeah, I just put you on your back. I loved it. I loved it.
Yes, those are things that's what we wanted to see from them. That, and we did. All right, Chris, we'll move over to the defense. How about it?
Awesome.
Okay. Let me throw more numbers at you.
Please do.
How about KJ Winston? 12 tackles. And by the way, a forced fumble. Jalen Reed, 9 tackles, a tackle for loss, and also a fumble recovery. We said we had pretty good safeties. I think we do.
Yeah, and to mention Zaki Wheatley as well, had some really nice tackles. I thought most of the day played pretty well in space. That safety group, I think, is the heart of this year's defense.
Definitely. And the fact that you have one of them playing essentially a linebacker role, the line, however you want to put it, they are now part of the defense against the running game. We also know KJ Winston is going to be part of the defense against the run. That's part of it. But if you also look at this, remember going into this game, and I pointed out when I was right, I'll point out also, Chris, when I've been wrong. My fear going into this game was Garrett Green, that he would be that special kind of quarterback that could – make things happen, you know, one of those third and long plays, play breaks down, pocket breaks down, guy escapes. Next thing you know, he's 28 yards down the field with a huge first down. The crowd's going crazy. Garrett Green, 10 rushes, netted out to 5 yards, Chris.
So lateral speed obviously is a big part of that. There is a lot of speed that has been recruited to Penn State the last few years. Credit to James Franklin and his staff for doing that. But much more importantly, in my opinion, the speed is great. And I've said this about Penn State's linebackers in particular in previous years. If you're fast and you're undisciplined and you don't know where you're supposed to be on the field, that only means you're going to get to the wrong place faster. And what I give a ton of credit to the defense in terms of containing Green and his dual threat ability is because they weren't just fast. They were fast to the right spot. It's been a long time since I've watched the middle of a Penn State defense and thought, man, it kind of reminds me of the old Ron Vanderlinden days. I saw that on Saturday.
And when you talk in terms of speed and you talk about some of those people and you talk about not just the cornerbacks and safeties, you get a Tony Rojas from linebacker and you see how fast he is, Chris, and you got some of the linebackers and the defensive line. Chris, I'm not watching my clock. We're out of time. We're going to pick it up from there when we get back for quarter four.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Chris. I'm Jim, talking Penn State, West Virginia. And Chris, we finished up quarter three. And I had so much momentum going, so much to say. I lost track of the clock. We're talking about the quickness, the speed of the defense. How about Smith Vilbert from his defensive end position?
Oh,
how
man.
How quick did he look?
That's found money, right? That guy has not suited up for Penn State for over 2 years now. And you didn't really know what you were going to get from him. Made one of the more important plays in the entire ball game in terms of the forcing the fumble, when and where he did on the field. We've got a player there, Jim. There was a real question after Abdul Carter and Deni Dennis Sutton. And by the way, my number one negative from the game is we got to get the offside stuff cleaned up. I understand you're trying to jump the count. And if you can time it perfectly, that's great. But when you mess it up that many times, you got to go back into the lab and get that fixed. But behind those two guys, who I thought, all things considered, had a pretty strong debut. Certainly, you saw flashes of the disruptive ability of both. You would like to see them get home a little bit more and earlier in the game. And James Franklin said as much in his post-game press conference. But then you wondered, what are we going to get from Amin Vanover, who, by the way, also jumped off sides? What are we going to get? Are we going to get anything from Smith Vilbert? Can we get, you know, just adequate play? If he's anything above adequate, that's big time good news for Tom Allen and that defense. And just to go back to what I was talking about with discipline, player discipline, understanding the scheme and being in the right place and playing the right angles. That's a big thing that I saw on Saturday. Again, you could call me like Ron Vanderlinden, okay? Because I'm a Ron Vanderlinden stan. I just love that guy. I mean, listen, I don't think it's rocket science. For practically a decade, he sent a player at Penn State's signature position to the league every single season. And I always said about Ron Vanderlinden coached Penn State linebackers, they would be in the right place at the right time every time. And that's the kind of defense I saw from the entire back end of Penn State's D on Saturday. And not for nothing, I love bringing in an old school mentality guy like Tom Allen. Yeah, the scheme looked a little different than what we saw under Manny, but I thought Tom called a very, very strong game on Saturday. And like Andy Kotelnicki, I think he showed us that he's got a great handle on the talent at his disposal and can put those guys in a position to succeed. You saw it at Indiana when he was working with much lesser talent. He took the best he had and he squeezed the most out of it. Well, again, now he's got the keys to the Ferrari, and it's, you know, it's pretty exciting about what he could do with those type of players, with the top end talent that Penn State recruits.
And you did not see those plays where Well, there was a breakdown in the backfield, the defensive backfield, that allowed this guy wide open. You didn't see any of those kind of mistakes.
I thought AJ Harris also was as advertised. Man, that guy made a bunch of plays. He looks like he was really cementing himself as the number one corner. But then the good news is the downstream of AJ, you had a bunch of players who look like they are ready to play. But the Peach Bowl should be a distant memory for all of us.
Yes, and to see Elliot Washington come in, talking about that down the field, that the pathway, see him make the play that he did, that was quite the athletic play to make that interception.
100%. I like that kid a lot. I think he maybe got forgotten a little bit because it was Cam Miller and Zion Tracy who got the start in the Peach Bowl. But what you saw from Washington last year, I liked. And he appears to have picked up that momentum and is only building on it. Cam Miller played well, I thought. And Jalen Kimber, I thought, looked like he was maybe getting his sea legs again a little bit in the first quarter, which is totally understandable. New player in a new environment in the first game of the season, playing in a new defense. And he settled in as the game went on. So I have said all offseason, you like to say when you're right. I'll be honest, I like to say when I'm right too. I have been touting the secondary overall, and the cornerback position included, despite the results against Ole Miss, as potentially one of the top strengths of this football team. What I saw on Saturday makes me believe that it's going to pan out. And important to understand now, Jim, too, the way this schedule shakes out, you got this big challenge out of the way, then you have MAC team, bye week, MAC team. So this staff now has plenty of time to keep building on all the good things that you saw on Saturday and to clean up and fix the stuff that wasn't that great. I think the schedule through the first third of the season is set up very nicely for Penn State to keep growing as a team. And that's exciting too.
And once more, by having an opponent with a pulse in this first game changes everything.
Yep.
Again, if this would have been another MAC team, you would be, you know, in your fifth week of the season, not having any clue as to what you had talent-wise. The fact that you have this game film. And I think also, Chris, the one guy, I'm using this as my segue, that can use this time over the next couple weeks, the bye week, the couple cupcakes from the MAC, is Abdul Carter. It is an adjustment to go to defensive end. And he did some things, again, in my texting, I heard from people, Abdul Carter, he's been awful. Well, also, you see in a play where there's a sack, they had to dedicate two people to Abdul Carter, and he was still threatening the pocket. I do believe, though, he got himself a little bit frustrated, got himself a little bit anxious. That was part of the offsides. That was part of the back-to-back offsides, then the late hit. Those are things that need to be cleaned up, but can be.
Can I give you a very unpopular hot take?
Go
on,
for it.
On that late hit, I have zero problem with him doing that at all. Look, that game was not – they were not at risk of changing that game with that penalty. And I understand if it becomes a problem that he can't control his temper, and certainly there have been some indications with his off-field behavior that he struggles with that, then that's an issue. In that situation, sometimes when you just got to skirt the line a little bit and set the tone, I don't really have a problem with it. You think about a guy with Jim, I can't tell you how many times I have had to avoid using words the FCC does not like in this broadcast because I'm so fired up. I think about guys who have what my co-host on Obligatory, Brandon Noble, likes to call, excrement in their neck, okay? I think about a guy like Trey Bauer. I think about LeVar Arrington getting into it with the pit punter. Like, sometimes you need a guy who walks the line and can tactically just edge over it a little bit in order to set the tone for his teammates and send a message to the opposition. At the time that happened, I know there are going to be a bunch of old school guys in the audience screaming at me, and it's okay. I get it. I understand. But as I was sitting there watching it, I said, I don't have a problem with that at all.
Well, I'll tell you what, speaking of skirting the FCC rules, I'm going to give you, remind me when we're done recording, I'm going to give you
a great setup. Okay.
I'll give you an expression that I like to use, but I'll take a little bit different look at that play, where in the momentum, in the playing of the game with such enthusiasm, especially on defense being so aggressive, it was a late hit. In my mind, there was no doubt. It was late. It was out of bounds. But what I will take away from it is he didn't just blow the guy up. He went there, knew it was happening, could not stop, and said, "Oh no," I think he probably used a different word, and tried to hold himself up. Okay. He did try to stop.
I don't think he was trying to blast the guy or anything, but when it became clear that he was going to make contact, he was like, "You know what? The refs have been helping these guys out. There's been so much smack talk. This is a chippy game. I'm just going to let them have it." Like I was joking about when we were watching it live, I remembered one play in an IM football game at Penn State, which is all flag. And I just was getting super frustrated. And I got isolated against a guy in space. And there was this little moment where my brain triggered. It was just like, you know what? Just do the right thing. And I just laid the guy out. So, you know, sometimes you just got to do it. Sometimes you just got to send a message to set the tone. So we'll watch what happens with him over the next few weeks. And 99 times out of 100, I'm going to be really mad about that. It shows a lack of discipline. It can really hurt your football team if you do it in the wrong situation. Like I think about, you know, CJ Thorpe punching that guy on the sidelines, and it really hurt in Penn State years ago. But I don't want to spend too much more time on it other than to say that in that one case, I did not have too big of an issue with it. And as to Abdul's play overall, I mean, I think it's a major league exaggeration to describe it as awful. It's maybe not what you would want overall from a polished defensive end, but from a guy who just brings raw playmaking ability and has been at that position for 5 minutes, I thought he also showed some good things as well. So the question now is, can the staff refine it? Can they fix the mistakes? Can he as a player grow more into the position? And when you saw him causing the amount of disruption that he did, when you saw West Virginia consistently having to occupy two blockers to keep him controlled, I feel pretty optimistic about that as well.
And with that said, the one group we didn't talk about on the defense are the tackles. And the best statistic to confirm that, Chris, isn't anything they did. It's take a look at the rushing totals. Remember, three returning West Virginia players with over 750 rushing yards last year. They were under control the whole game, Chris.
What's been the Achilles heel of James Franklin's best teams over the course of his tenure? It's problems along the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. Again, let's just cautious optimism. I don't want to jinx anything. In terms of what we know about the players, and given what we've seen so far, one game into the season, we can really start at least entertaining the notion that that is going to be a strength of the 2024 team. Again, both sides of the ball. Pretty exciting.
It really is. One last comment, because you know I also want to talk about the media, the coverage. I'm a Joel Klatt fan. I like when he's doing the Penn State games.
Same. I like him. I know there are still some folks in the fan base who have not forgiven him for saying that Wisconsin should go to the Rose Bowl over Penn State in 2019. But to me, that's water under the bridge. He's going to call it like he sees it, and sometimes I'm not going to like it. But yeah, I think he's a strong analyst. Maybe a few of the Philadelphia Flyers fans in the audience will laugh at the fact that I still sometimes occasionally slip up and call him Trent Klatt, though.
Well, I appreciate it. I know Gus Johnson is one of those guys that you either love him or hate him. But to me, it's Joel Klatt is the guy in that group. I appreciate him calling the Penn State games. I think he's fair. I think his analysis, I think we saw that went with the bad review of the play where the West Virginia player never even threatened the first down. All right, Chris, unfortunately, that's it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.